Hello and welcome to The Course. I'm your host today, Lee, and I'm speaking with Professor Darcy Merritt from the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice. Her research centers on the experiences of parents of color who are impacted by child protection services and the racism within that system. She's also committed to elevating the voices of parents and children in the discussion of prevention methods and service delivery in the context of systemic racism and racialized poverty. Professor Merritt is here to talk to us about her career path and how she became a University of Chicago professor. Welcome to The Course, Professor Darcy Merritt. It is a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Darcy, let's start off with the general overview here, and I'm interested in your career path. We can begin in your undergraduate years and then take me all the way to now and your current role at the University of Chicago.
Sure. So I started my undergraduate work at Sarah Lawrence College in New York, and my focus was sociology and psychology, and I became very interested in those intersections, and that's how I ended up in the social work field. I was very interested in child development. When I was an undergraduate student, I did an internship at a child development center that was part of the campus there, and it was a very organic do-it-yourself intellectual place, which mirrors UChicago in a lot of ways, I've learned. So then I went out into the world and started working in social service agencies, both public and private, where I worked with families that and children that were impacted by the child welfare system, making placements, adoptive placements, foster child placements, kinship care placements. And the reason why I left working out in the world as a practitioner is because I was noticing that there were some harms happening to the families that were engaged with these systems, and I couldn't find the literature that addressed those harms or that even acknowledged it. So after many years working out on the ground, I decided to go back to grad school. So I started the combined program. There's a combined MSW and PhD program at UCLA, School of Department of Social Welfare. And so I started that program with a focus on children and their parents and racism and how people fared under the oversight of the child welfare system. And there's also oversight and overlap with the other systems like the housing system and the carceral system. So I got through that both of those degrees in 5 years because that's what the handbook said to do. I didn't realize that I could just kind of like spend a little bit more time there. So when I graduated with my doctorate from there, I went to my first academic position at Rutgers School of Social Work, and I was there for 3 years. I consider it more to be a kind of like it was my own postdoc, because when I left there, I went to NYU as an assistant professor, and I was at NYU for 12 years, and I worked my way through tenure, and so 6 years before tenure, 6 years after, and now I've just begun my appointment at University of Chicago in January. So that's in a nutshell my trajectory, but I've always been in the same area of focus and research.
Can you talk to me a little bit about your research? You know, what motivates you, what you're hoping to accomplish?
Sure. Well, when I was in the field working, I was noticing that parents were not having a voice. So services and interventions were being done to them, but they weren't having any input and allowed to give any feedback about what was happening. And the stakes are extremely dire because they're at risk of having their children removed by the state. And that was very scary for a lot of parents, but nobody was asking them through the process, how does this make you feel? How is your family coping under these circumstances? Nobody was asking the first question, which is what they should have asked, what happened to you? The assumption is that parents were poor parents and they were not raising their children appropriately or to the expectations of some very privileged, powerful people. And those people were not taking into consideration their histories of oppression or systemic racism or implicit bias, a lack of opportunity, how this system's involvement is intergenerational. Nobody was asking them. So I wanted to go back to school to specifically study how parents experienced this oversight system. And so that's what I did because the literature needed to be bolstered with those accounts.
So Darcy, let's take a minute and dive a little bit more into your personal history. So when you were a little kid, What did you think you were going to be when you grew up? Or what did you want to be?
Well, I wanted to be a doctor, a medical doctor, a pediatrician. And then I learned quickly through my hard science classes that that was a bad idea. But so I decided that wasn't right for me, but I did end up becoming a doctor, but more appropriately an academic doctor. I used to bring home children who were unhappy at their homes. I was always the kid that was running around trying to solve and fix things and help kids that like were unhappy. I would bring them home for dinner. And so I think I've always had this in my soul from when I was very small. And then I continued to do that in one way or another throughout my entire life, actually.
And then what were you like as a student? Like, were you a good student, a mediocre student? What was your, I guess, relationship with school like when you were in middle and high school?
Well, I was a great student. I didn't, from when I was small, you would never see me without a book. Like, everybody knew I would always have a book. So I was an avid reader. I loved to read. I did really well in school. I went to a private girls' school for high school. And so it was a good environment for me. So, yeah, I was a pretty good student all the way. I love school. I wish I could go back to school. If I was independently wealthy, I would just stay in school.
And then what motivated your desire to become an academic and to go through the process of getting a PhD, which is not for the faint of heart?
Not at all. It's not at all for the faint of heart, especially as a Black woman. So that plays a very significant role in my experience in the academy, me being a Black woman, because it's normally a place for privileged white people who have those opportunities to get themselves through all of the different things. But as I said, my experience working with impacted parents in the field really motivated me to go back to school so that I could actually make a difference from the other end. Also, my mother was a teacher, so teaching is kind of in my family. So I enjoy teaching very much, and I've had some really fantastic teachers in my life, and there's always a teachable moment, and there's always a way to support somebody. And so my mission is to support students, particularly BIPOC students, those who look like me and those who might need some guidance in navigating this academy.
And can you tell me a little bit more about your experience in grad school and some of the challenges that you encountered, specifically challenges related to your race and your identity?
Well, I had imposter syndrome, which I still do. I think it just comes with the territory. So I felt very supported at my grad school, UCLA, my department. My professors were wonderful, and they basically just made sure that I was well supported there. It's a very good program. I was trained really well. So, and also the camaraderie with my classmates was great. Like, our cohort, we're still friends now. We still like keep in touch with one another. And that's been really just enriching for me and heartwarming. So I enjoyed grad school. I didn't have the pressures of being a professor, so that was different. I oftentimes tell my mentor, I'm like, you didn't tell me that it was going to be like this once I finished school. I thought it was just, you know, roses and flowers and everything was great. I didn't realize all the underbelly of the academy, so to speak. But I really enjoyed my program and I enjoyed my professors.
And who did you lean on for support? Or did you have a mentor or anything, or someone, honestly, to look up to who had walked the path that you were on?
Well, my mentor is at school was Todd Franke, a white man. And so I've been supported by a lot of white men, to be honest, as I'm thinking back. There weren't a lot of role models for me, Black women. There was one Black woman professor while I was in school, but there weren't a lot of role models that had walked my specific path. So that's why I'm trying to be that role model for others.
What about family and friends? How did they support you?
Oh, my goodness. At the time that I was going through grad school, I was divorced. And so I was a single parent. And my father, if it weren't for my father, I don't know what, because he would like do a lion's share of like after school care and things like that when I had to be at school studying or in class. My mom was a teacher, a wonderful teacher. So I give her all credit for that. But basically, my parents, with myself and my brother, my father always says, there's two things that can never be taken away from you, and that's your education and your travel experience. So they did the best in their power and ability to make sure that we had those things. And so that's why I'm so well-traveled. And that's why I've been educated at some of the best schools in the country. all due to them. So they've always encouraged my academic trajectory. And they're very, well, my mom's gone now, but I'm sure she's proud. But my dad is very proud as well. And my son is also quite keen to intellectual development. He's graduated now from college, but it's education's an expectation and a big deal in my family.
And I imagine being a single parent while pursuing a PhD adds its own layer of complexity and challenge.
Indeed, indeed. But it turned out really well because my son, he oftentimes thanks me. He thanks me for going through what I went through with him as a young one. But, and also he got to see mom study. Like, that's cool. If you're studying and you see mom studying and mom's going to class and mom's teaching, that kind of sunk into him. So I think the fact that I had support from my friends as well. I don't have any of my personal friends. They're not in academia, but they were always very supportive and like helped me with him. And, you know, they would give me feedback on things I was working on. So I've been, well, as I'm talking to you, I've been extremely well supported in my career choices.
Well, speaking of career choices, why did you want to become a professor versus some other job that could try to affect some of that change that you wanted to see in the world?
I think I belong in an intellectual environment. I mean, I studied philosophy for fun in college. It's just who I am. And I really enjoy educating students. And I like to have, when they write back to me a year or two later and they remember something I said to them in class and how it had impacted them in a different way upon reflection, that's the most meaningful thing ever. So I have a host of past students that have expressed their appreciation well after they finished their programs. So I enjoy educating students. I enjoy just having them engage in a critically thoughtful environment. I'm not really formulaic in my teaching. I look for those teachable moments and I just let the conversation evolve and try to keep it closely aligned with their specific interests. I'm particularly careful to support Black and Brown women who are coming up. In fact, all of my doctoral students that I've mentored have been Black and Brown women thus far.
And did you have an aha moment at any point that you were like, wow, okay, I see this. This is something I really want to dive into, study, understand the mechanics of, and do something to fix? Was there a moment like that in your career that's really informed the research that you've done up until now?
I think it's been building up, and I think it's a combination of a host of things, and it's been building up along my academic trajectory. And that moment is just, it's morphed into what I always knew, but I'm now able to articulate and people are listening and acknowledging. And that's the fact that racism is embedded in all of our systems. And so that moment is how have we been treating people, engaging families in the ways in which we have been without considering racism in the processes. So there's a healthy conversation happening right now in my field about this, but it's long, long overdue. So I think that's what's most both surprising and upsetting is that we're just now engaging in the literature and people are acknowledging that, yes, this is a problem. We need to figure out how these systems are impacting marginalized people.
I appreciate that reflection. And what about finding inspiration in the work that you do? Who are the people and what are, you know, maybe it's people, maybe it's something else. Like, where are you finding that inspiration?
I find the inspiration every time I talk to and interview a birth parent, a birth mom, and they thank me and they feel comfortable and they open up and they trust me with their trauma stories. And so they inspire me because I want to make sure that they feel supported because what's been happening has not been support or healing for them. It's been traumatic. And also, my son inspires me a great deal. He's just the smartest person I know, and he's very grounded, and he helps me to be mindful of present moment and not spiral out of control and switch up my routines. He's a very emotionally healthy kid.
I want to jump back to something that you mentioned earlier, which was travel and the importance of travel that your parents instilled in you. Can you tell me about some of the travel that you've done in your career and how what you've researched, what you've experienced and witnessed in the U.S. has applied to other countries?
Yeah. So first, I mean, I lived out of the country on an exchange program as a high school student. I lived in Malaysia for 5 or 6 months. So as I said, I've been traveling my whole life. But most of the travel I do now is to present my work at conferences. I was invited to present a keynote for UNICEF in Beijing. So I've been invited by a couple of other universities in Shanghai. So I've been to Shanghai twice and Beijing once. And so wherever there's a conference that's focused on child welfare issues, whether in this region or in other regions, then I try to apply to those conferences. I have given many talks on the way in which the Western child welfare system differs from places such as China, places such as Abu Dhabi. I gave a week-long training to people in their human services department in Abu Dhabi. I've been to Qatar and Oman and Netherlands and Berlin. So I go all over the world presenting my research. And wherever I go, I try to understand how things are different in those places. It's very different in China, but there is an issue to be dealt with. And so I've been requested to provide feedback on how to build up their child welfare system with some of the tenets that we have here in our system.
And what was that experience like?
Oh, I loved it. I love traveling and I love going to China as well. I was very well received and it was a humbling experience. And I love different cultures and I love meeting new people and understanding how things differ in other places. And it's always food for thought. So I plan to continue my international work.
And Darcy, you've already accomplished so much in your career, but what are your goals for yourself as you move forward into the future?
Well, my professional goals are to work myself out of a reason to research child neglect and how parents are being treated. I would like to not have to, I'd like the problem to be fixed or mitigated. So that's my professional goal, is to get to a place where, okay, we've addressed this and we've taken a shift away from what we were doing and the ways in which we were treating people. So that's my professional goals. And I just want to pay attention to how our society is caring for the most marginalized amongst us. And that can be a host of different problems that need to be addressed. So, and then I want to be a good teacher and I want to bolster the Black community. So I'm trying to get funded a center for Black and African American research, and it'll be an interdisciplinary center. And so scholars in different disciplines will all come together and work on projects individually or together that have to do with a strength-based perspective of caring for Black and Brown communities. We spend too much time looking at their risk factors and not enough time looking at what works, what makes them resilient, and what their strengths are out of respect. So that's my professional goals. My personal goals are just to remain mindful and healthy and well-learned and just, you know, a kind human being, a kind person in the society that's productive and contributing.
I'm interested in the interdisciplinary center that you mentioned. Where did the idea for that come from?
Well, there was a call. ACF, the government, had a call for proposals to develop such a center, but they had specific areas of research that they wanted to have done. And so I didn't get that funding, which turns out to be a blessing, because now I wrote this whole grant and it's really exciting. But now I don't have to be tethered to their specific research goals, and all of the people on the team can study and develop projects that they really wanted to do. So I don't have those parameters and those boundaries around me anymore. And so there'll be people from public health, law, education, nursing, all of the different sociology, all of the different disciplines that make sense to that study issues that impact the Black community. And so I've pulled them all together. So it's virtual in nature and everybody's on board. We're just trying to get the funding sorted out. We're doing like project here, project there, until we can get the infrastructure funding. But it's very exciting because what's innovative about it is that it's kind of by our people for our people. So instead of our typical understanding of diversity, which is a lot of white people and a handful of Black and brown people. This center is going to be fully resourced by Black and brown people with a sample of white people. So it's a different way of looking at diversity.
Wow, that sounds really exciting. And speaking of exciting things, can you tell me about the fun parts of your job? Like, what do you really love about what you do?
Well, I would say there's lots of different fun parts of my job. I do enjoy teaching once I'm in the classroom. The preparation is a little bit daunting, but I love engaging students in conversation and having them, you know, think of new ideas, thinking outside of the box. I love the process of learning. I do love writing. And believe it or not, doing coding for my data analysis is actually a lot of fun for me. I'm a nerd like that. Yeah. And also what's incredible is just over the years, knowing how many nice, wonderful colleagues I now am tethered to for the rest of my life from other places. And so I've met a lot of really good people that are doing fantastic work, and I have a great deal of respect, and I'm humbled to be in their world.
And because even the jobs that we love, there are parts of them that we don't love. Can you be real and talk a little bit about just some of the stuff about your job that you are not a big fan of, that is not that fun?
Yeah, just as I said, racism is embedded in all of our systems because that's how our country was founded. Racism is also embedded in the academy. And so I've experienced more than my fair share of that in both overt and subtle ways. And so what I wasn't prepared for, that I didn't know was going to happen and I don't like, is the politics. There's a lot of politics and there's a lot of, you know, strategies that need to be put in place to kind of step around those problems that can arise. So the politics of the tenure process, it's just awful, but we have to get through it. The politics are involved in the publication process, but I'm an editor of a journal now, so I have the opportunity to be mindful of how to mitigate that and avoid that as much as possible. So yeah, I would say the politics is the worst part of it.
And the embedded racism.
It's really bad. It's really bad.
Thinking of the embedded racism and thinking also of the joy that you get out of the work, two things can be true at once, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you think about people like yourself, so Black and brown people and Black and brown women, maybe in particular, what advice would you have for them if they're considering joining the academy and pursuing a PhD in social work?
I would suggest that they find a group of sisters. They need sisterhood. And when I say sisters, I'm not just talking about Black and brown people. They need sisters of all kinds. So I've been very fortunate. One of my dear friends and colleague is a white woman, and she has stepped up for me in so many meaningful ways. I can't even tell you how, like, it just blows my mind. And so I need that allyship. So I would suggest that people like me coming up through the system need to have allies. They need to have people who have more power and privilege than they do to speak for them when needed, because those times will be needed. Because before I had tenure, I wasn't in the decision-making rooms. So I wasn't able to speak up for anybody coming up behind me. Now I can, and I make a concerted effort to do so. So they need to have a network of people in wherever they can that they can just go to for healing as well and for just some support, because it's very hard. So just people they can trust and they can go to and can give them some advice or help them, like, step around whatever might be in front of them that's going to be a problem.
On the flip side of that, I wonder sometimes, since you are in this ivory tower, so to speak, what you wished people in academia understood about the work that others, so people outside of the academy, are doing on the ground when it comes to, you know, your research interest, your research focus.
Yeah, we need to really look at the people that we're trying to help. There's a lot of people. These are actual humans that can be traumatized by oversight systems. So that's what I want people to understand. And children are in families, and elders are in families. So those who study aging, I guarantee you there's children in that family somewhere. And so there's a lot of overlap. So we need to consider all of the individuals that comprise families and how everybody's impacted by these systems and by neighborhoods and opportunities for education, opportunities for employment. It's all together, connected. And so that's what I try to pay attention to, which is why it was important for me to make sure that the center is interdisciplinary, because there's so much overlap. See, racism is a public health problem as well.
And Darcy, finally, I want to ask you about the most gratifying thing about your job. What is that for you?
I think it's being able to include the voices of these impacted moms in the literature, being able to speak for them with their permission, obviously, and through their words in the field of social welfare and at conferences. That's the most gratifying, is to actually be able to champion and center their experiences and their voices. That's why I do what I do.
Thank you, Professor Darcy Merritt, for your time today. And course takers, if you enjoyed listening to today's interview, please check out the other ones. Leave us a comment, subscribe, follow, and share this episode with your friends and family. You can find out more about the University of Chicago through uchicago.edu or the university's campus in Hong Kong through uchicago.hk. Stay tuned for more, and thanks for listening.